Hi, Ben. My name is Alice, and my secret is that I was accused of attempted murder. But it's hard to tell people the story because they immediately wonder if it might just be true.
Today, The Secret Room presents Mother of Accusations. In this episode, Alice sits down in the secret room with a weight on her shoulders that can never be fully lifted. It's the story of a mother's utter betrayal of her daughter. What on earth would you do if the one person you're supposed to trust the most in the world accused you of attempted murder? Hi, Alice. Welcome to the secret room.
Thanks for having me, Ben. Appreciate it.
Your story is going to take us to some dark places.
Yeah.
To be accused of attempted murder cannot be a picnic.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I buried it for many years. That's probably the kind of the secret part of it is that I didn't tell anybody about it for a really, really long time. I probably, you know, besides the people who were either directly or indirectly engaged with me when this was going on, know about it, obviously. But that's 30 years ago and certainly gained a lot of other people in my life, and it's certainly not something I share very frequently at all.
You've held the story really close for obvious reasons. I imagine if you tell someone you were unjustly accused of attempted murder, they're going to think, oh, maybe you did do it.
Right.
Tell me about where it all started.
I grew up in a middle-class house. My dad was a college professor, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom, but she had a little seamstress business kind of out of the house, kind of helped the neighborhood ladies with some seamstress work. And that's what she did when we were younger. Yeah, so we lived in a great neighborhood, a lot of kids. My parents had lots of friends. Very, in my opinion, a very normal, healthy, middle-class life, you know, until it wasn't. But I mean, for a while, it was, you know, it was great. I had a brother, a dog, you know, lots of friends, the whole thing. So.
In your secret to me, you mentioned that your mom is a really important figure in your story. And when you were a kid, she was really awesome.
Yeah, I feel like she was attentive and she was very, very creative. So when I was young, real young, like before maybe fourth grade, she not only was she a seamstress, but she did a lot of refurbishing of antiques. She would throw these great birthday parties for me and all the neighborhood kids would come and she would make this amazing cake. And in particular, she was really into making my clothes when I was young. And then she would make a little outfit for my doll or my Barbie that matched. So, I mean, you know, above and beyond kind of mom when you're that age.
She sounds great.
Yeah, she was.
Was she equally attentive to your brother?
I think so. My brother had some emotional problems. He was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck when he was born. And so the doctor said, hey, he's going to have some behavioral problems, but he'll grow out of them. And he was a true pain in the ass when I was young. Like he definitely sucked up a lot of attention. And I had to spend a lot of time, probably more time than maybe normal kids, because my parents had to really focus on him when he was younger. And he was about a year and a half older than me. My mom had endometriosis, so she had to have another kid right away. So that's why we're so close in age. So he was a handful, to say the least, when we were really young. He threw huge like temper tantrums and just where he was inconsolable sometimes. But when he got older, maybe high school, he kind of snapped out of it, you know. But during childhood, it was a challenge. It was a challenge to travel with them. Family vacations were not easy, that kind of stuff. Now he's, of course, a healthy, thriving, middle-aged adult, so he's good.
And how was dad during those years?
Yeah, so my dad worked a lot. He was around. He certainly was around at night. We definitely had dinner, you know, family dinners and stuff like that when we were younger. And he was engaged. When I was young, he definitely was not my primary parent. I definitely went to my mom because she was at home all the time. And he was sort of the guy that came home at night and sat down for dinner and then took to his chair for TV, kind of a dad.
How would you define your relationship with him then? I mean, was it still good, or was it like, you know, this guy's ignoring me.
When I was young?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know any different. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't super engaged. He was never the dad that showed up for your sports things. And he definitely wasn't like teaching you soccer or anything like that. But I mean, in general, he was engaged. He was a pretty good dad.
Would it be fair to say that you were, you know, you gravitated toward your mom a little bit more just because she was so much more hands-on?
Yeah, I think me and my brother did. Definitely. When we were younger.
But things changed, right?
Most definitely changed. Yes.
How old were you when that change happened?
So I think it probably started around fifth grade. What are you, 10 or 11 around then? She started to kind of just disassociate from me. I can't really say that she did that for my brother. And they have always had a very different relationship. But for me, she was just not the warm person that I would sit next to while we watched Masterpiece Theater,
right.
You know, growing up. She changed. And I don't know what that was. I believe that it was a combination of things were not going well with my dad. She was probably stressed out, but she was also a very, very heavy drinker. Maybe when you're young, you know, when you just have children, you just don't have the energy to drink. I don't know. But I mean, I think, you know, once things got easier and she didn't have to be hands on 24/7, it was like night and day. It was literally like, I'm not here for you.
Wow. So she really pulled back.
To me, it just seemed very, very abrupt. Yeah.
And you said that that coincided with some stress between your parents?
There was a lot of arguing going on. Back in the 80s, people didn't really get divorced. This was like early 80s. I didn't know anybody who was experiencing the same thing that I was experiencing at home. But there was a lot of arguing at night, doors slamming. I think one time my mom like literally locked herself in the bathroom. She had this huge bathroom. She locked herself in there for the night. A couple times she would come into my room and sleep with me and she would cry. My dad was never a yeller, ever. He was never like a very dramatic person. He had cutting words for sure, but never dramatic. I never really heard him yell. It was more her. I'm sure that it went both ways, but it was clear after a few, probably a good 6 months to a year, that this wasn't going to work out. So it was tough. They did not like each other at all anymore.
That period must have been very stressful for you.
I think it was. I mean, now that I think about it, yes, I remember sort of not telling people about it or confiding in my friends. And, you know, this is during the latchkey years. I mean, I rolled into everybody's house in my neighborhood just unannounced, whatever, you know what I mean? Grabbed a snack and left. It's just what you do. So I experienced other people's parents' relationships. And so that probably was the thing that really caught on for me is like, okay, this isn't happening in my family. This is definitely not happening in my family. There's a problem.
During this time, did your mom's drinking increase?
I can't really say that I noticed. I didn't really know that she had a drinking problem for quite a while until one day they came out with Tab, which was like the first diet soda all the moms were into. And she got the 2 liter of diet soda, the Tab, and she would put it in the fridge and nobody was allowed to touch it, right? And we weren't allowed to have any soda, anything like that when we were young. So this like bottle of soda in the fridge that you couldn't touch was so tempting, right?
I'm sure.
So one day I would sneak, you know, a little from her glass. She would have it in a lowball glass with ice. And I would try to wait till she left the kitchen and I'd take a little sip of it because I was just so interested in what it was. And it tasted absolutely terrible. I just remember going, I cannot believe anybody would drink this. It tastes terrible.
Right.
But now that I know, I figured out that there was vodka in it. I didn't know that at the time.
You tried Tab later on and...
I tried Tab later on. It still tasted absolutely just complete garbage, but it was a very different taste. And at that time when I knew what vodka tasted like, or I knew that liquor was in there, and I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't paying attention to the science or for drinking at all when I was young until things started getting ugly in the house and then the sipping of the Tab. And then, you know, I don't know, one day she came and she had her entire ear bandaged and she had fallen while she was running, which she has never in her life gone for a run, almost like tore part of her ear off.
Oh my God.
And just like strange things like that would happen.
Is there any chance that that injury was you know, from something else?
I guess so. I mean, it's possible, but I just remember my dad telling me, okay, well, she was running, and then, and maybe he'd lied to me. Maybe that's, you know, he's making something up. I don't know, but I just thought, okay, who would run in sandals down a boulevard?
Yeah, nobody.
She's never once gone for a run in her life. So I was just like, what a weird thing. But she really injured herself.
You think maybe she had fallen down in a drunken stupor?
Yeah, uh-huh. I do.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. Logic tells me that's probably what was going on. And just strange things like that would happen. Yeah.
You don't think there was any abuse from your father?
No, he was never a physical person. He was far too intellectual and lazy in that respect. His words hurt more than anything physical.
I see.
That was his MO.
So your mom is descending more into alcohol.
Yeah.
There's trouble in the marriage.
Yes.
Did she change in the way she behaved toward you?
Yeah, she was a completely different mom. I try to explain this to people. It was like living with somebody that was new in the house. And it wasn't like immediate. There was a progression. I definitely was pushed away from her, and she was very annoyed a lot with me, super frustrated. Then she started getting a little physical. Like, she would pull my hair all the time, pull me up the stairs by my hair.
Oh my God.
And I was really like, all you can do is hold on to your head. I don't know. It's just a shocking feeling to be pulled by your hair.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. She had these pretty long nails. She was always sort of a little bit done up, and she would dig her nails into the inner part of my armpit. I think she did that to hide the bruises. I'm not sure, but I mean, like, you know, don't ever try that, because it really, really, really hurts. It really hurts. And it hurts for a long ass time, like days. So she started to just hate me. And I people, you know, when I say that word, sometimes people are like, oh, you know, come on now, she's your mom. I really do believe that she just was totally disgusted by me. And I don't know exactly why. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'll ever know that. But definitely she fell out of love with me. Yeah, it was hard. It hurt a lot. And I couldn't figure out what I was doing that was such a disappointment to her. But I knew, I absolutely knew I was a disappointment to her.
Did she make comments about your physical appearance?
Yep. I had always been kind of a big kid. And yeah, she would tell me I was fat all the time. Or she would say, we could go shopping for clothes for the beginning of school, but you're never going to be able to fit in any of the things at like the Limited or, you know, all the cool stores that I wanted to shop in, you know, because they were trendy at the time. She said she wouldn't want to, you know, she didn't want to spend money on things that I wasn't going to fit in because I was too fat. And the way she said fat was like fat, you know, like she was just so obnoxious, you know what I mean? Like, she was Southern, so she had this obnoxious kind of twang that just made you feel worse. The word felt worse. I don't know. She was always like a small, petite, very cute, very popular girl her whole life. Grew up in the South and Southern Belle and the whole thing. And so she didn't like who I was or who I was becoming. She didn't like the way I looked. And she was brutally honest about it.
I would think that with all this turmoil going on at home, that you're not feeling particularly safe anymore.
I don't think I felt safe for a couple years with her living in the house, because I just felt like I was constantly on edge. It was like living with somebody that there's nothing you could do to make them happy. And all you wanted to do was just have them hold your hand or reach out or smile at you across the table. Mm-hmm. And she just, it was not in her. She could not do it. She just did not like me at all. I can't explain how that changed. She was not like that when I was little.
I imagine you confided in your brother about the turmoil at home.
Yeah.
What conversations did you share?
So my brother and I really did not talk a lot about the things going on. Like, sure, in passing, we would say something, mention something. And then, of course, during some of these events that were happening, like, you know, one time we were out to dinner and my mom got really upset and got up and left. And then my brother and I had to walk out to the car and wait for my dad to like pay the bill. We had no idea where my mom was. And so little conversations here and there. But Cass, my brother, is a little bit of a different person. He has always been a little bit detached from the relationships in our family.
Okay.
It wasn't like I confided in him. I know we were close in age, but we did not interact very frequently in an emotional way. Okay. In an emotional way.
It sounds like your parents' relationship is heading toward some kind of climax.
Yes.
What happened?
So my mom moved out, and that's unusual, especially in those times. She moved out and she moved a couple blocks away. One day we just came home from school and like half the furniture was gone. Which is weird.
Wow.
Yeah. The stories sort of conflict and how that sort of worked out. But my understanding is she was the one that was like, look, I want to go a different direction. I'm leaving. And so he stayed in the house and he was our primary caretaker. It's my understanding she did not want custody of us. But then, of course, we did go to court and have to meet with a court-appointed psychologist to determine whether or not we should be living with our mom or our dad at that time.
So your parents are getting divorced?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Was there a moment when they told you?
So I don't think they ever sat down and pulled us together. I think that my dad told us that she was moving out. And then we had a separate conversation with her. And she's like, you know, this is where I'm moving to. This isn't, you know, we're going to file for divorce. It was not a clean divorce. It was a very ugly divorce. I don't even know all of the details. I don't want to know. But it was, you know, it was, they hated each other. They really hated each other. This is going to sound cold, but I think she wanted to potentially explore having custody of us for the money. But I don't think emotionally she had any interest in us living with her at all. And she certainly did not show any interest, you know, later on.
Did you have a sense of relief when she moved out?
I did. It was weird coming home and seeing half your furniture gone. And it's a little bit sort of like, okay, how are we going to rebuild? You know what I mean? Like the three of us, it is a weird feeling. But she was somebody that I, over the last couple of years, had could not confide in. And I didn't feel safe around her. I really did not feel safe around her. I didn't feel like, I was afraid of her, very afraid of her. And so when she left, it was a relief to have her gone and not have to think about it all the time.
But there was a chance that you might have to move in with her as the court sorted things out.
Yeah, there was a chance. But we both my brother and I said that we did not want to live with her.
What steps did the court take to make a decision?
It was a court-appointed psychologist who interviewed the four of us. He interviewed each person in the family and wrote up a report, basically. And in that report, it, you know, sort of did an analysis of each one of us and then a recommendation on how the living arrangement should work.
Wow. How was your interview?
It was a nightmare. It was one of the worst experiences of my life.
Oh my gosh. Why is that?
You know, you go into this weird mahogany encrusted room with this scary old man sitting there, and he's got no smile on his face. He's not engaging. I'm like, I'm a kid. And I'm sitting there, and I remember him distinctly asking me what half of 36 is. I think it took me maybe 5 minutes to answer the question. So if you can understand the fear that was running through my body from this person just being in the room with me, I couldn't even get to the point where I could split the number 36.
Why would he ask that?
I think it was an intelligence test.
So if you're more intelligent, you stay with one parent? If you're less intelligent,
I don't know.
I don't understand the strategy.
I don't know. I looked him up and he's still tied to a whole bunch of people's court documents with similar situations. I don't know if he's still living, but he was absolutely one of the worst human beings I've ever met in my life.
Awful.
He just was an ugly, ugly human. So he ended up writing these reports, and I've never read the report. I've only heard about it through many people, but mostly my dad. The report was not favorable to essentially any of us, but mostly to my mother. It did not paint a pretty picture of who she was as a human and how she would be as a single mother.
As painful as the experience was, he might have gotten that part right.
He definitely got that part right.
Okay.
Yes.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so your father gets custody.
He does.
And how often do you see your mom?
So we were assigned to see her Wednesday evenings. Don't know why. So we would go over for dinner on Wednesdays. And that's what we did for years and years and years. Just go there for dinner and leave.
How were those visits?
They were strained and annoying. And it was like, I got to check a box. I had to go. I didn't like seeing her. I missed her, but because I didn't have a mom.
Yeah, and she'd been such a cool mom before.
Right.
Sure, you remembered that and missed that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I felt like I really needed a mom.
Yeah.
And I didn't get to have one. And it really sucks. So these Wednesday visits sucked because it just was another reminder of like how I just could not understand what happened. You know what I mean? And why she wasn't, you know, part of my life.
Yeah, you're going over there on Wednesdays and you're like, who is this person? Like, you used to be so great.
Yeah. And she just, I don't know, she changed. She just started dressing differently. And she was, I don't know, she had different sets of friends now. And she just had lost her softness. She was not a soft person anymore. She was just, I don't know, no depth to her anymore.
All these years later, I can feel how much this still hurts you. I can't imagine what would have felt like back then in the moment.
Yeah, it hurts. Because I don't understand how you could not, like, I don't understand how you could not like your own daughter. I don't understand that. And I think it hurts me now more because I have my own daughters, you know? And I just like, and they're teenagers right now, and I'm living through what I didn't get to experience through my daughters. And it's, I'm grateful for that. Mm-hmm. I really am. But I'm also just super bitter that I didn't get that.
Yeah. Did it cause you to act out at the time in any way?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly acted out. You know, I'm 16. I had my license. I mean, I think my brother was too. You know, we were teenagers. It's just the way it goes. But I remember I got into a fight with my dad. I don't even remember what it was about, but he was pretty pissed off at me. So he was like, you can't use the car for a month. And I needed the car to go to school. My brother and I went to separate schools. We would trade off who, you know, every other whatever. So he basically was like, you know, my brother gets the car for the entire month. So I was super pissed at him. I called my mom and said, I would like to come and live with you for a month. And she was like, okay.
What'd your dad say?
He laughed and was just like, you go ahead and do that. Good luck.
Okay.
And, you know, he was doing the tough love thing. So I like packed up my bag and I went over to her house, and it was probably the hardest month of my entire life at that point. Like I had been away from her for so long that her daily routine and just her presence was something that I had forgotten was so intense. And I don't know, it's hard to explain. Like suddenly she's there and I can smell her and she's walking around and she's in my life next to me in the small apartment. It was a really scary time, but it was also the time that I really understood what was happening to her. Like she was really descending into something that I don't think she could ever get out of. She was really, really drunk a lot. She would pass out at 9 o'clock every night. She never had food in the house ever. She's mentally, I feel like she was declining a little. She talked to herself a lot, and she would not in the way that normal people would talk to themselves. She would like make a drink and sit in front of the sink with a cigarette and have a full conversation with nothing, with nobody.
Okay, so she's a little detached from reality.
Yes. It was very surreal living there, and it was kind of like for the first time on my own, it was truly on my own. Like, I had to figure out how I was going to get food and how I was going to get myself to school and how to, like, wash my clothes. I had no money, you know, so it was just one of those times. But then also it was a time where I feel like I was like, okay, hold on a second. Why does this lady have such a strong hold on me? She's a fucking mess. I mean, she is a fucking mess. So at some point in that month, I started really verbally acting out to her and just being like, you are a fucking train wreck. Is this how you're going to live your life? Like, you're going to be drunk every, you're going to burn your couch, your cigarettes, and not eat food. And
she passed out with her cigarettes.
Yes. And I mean, she had a cat living there. Like, I was, you know, she had no food, nothing. Like, she made no plans to actually mother me while I was there for that month at all. And it was, that was very clear in the first couple of days. And then we sort of like, it lived in this apartment, but very separately, and she would pass out. And I mean, I'm not going to lie. I would go into her wallet, take her money. I would go downstairs. I would pull her car out of the driveway and I would go out for the whole night with my friends. I mean, we weren't doing anything like serious. We, you know, would drive to somebody's house and sit in the basement. But the point was, is I was like, yes, I'm doing something hurtful to her. And it felt good. It felt really good.
Well, you're looking for food. You're growing up in a real hurry.
Yeah, I was. Yep.
And when you told her she was a mess, what did she say?
She would just laugh at me. She just had this sort of way of just making me feel like, you know, what I say is stupid. Or she would just walk away, light a cigarette and walk away, roll her eyes. She's a big eye roller. She didn't give a shit what I was saying to her, but I felt better, if that makes sense.
You felt better treating her poorly.
I did. I felt great treating her like shit. It felt good. And at 16, that was all I had, you know, or whatever. And I was just like, I'm going to take it.
Were you self-harming at all?
Yes. I started that probably when my parents were married.
What way?
I started that in middle school where I would pull my hair out. And I mean, it was noticeable. I was bald. Nobody ever said anything to me.
I mean, that's all your hair.
Well, it was like spots, you know what I mean? Like, it was at the top of my head, though. Like, one of them was at the top of my head, and then the rest were like kind of like I would pull around my ears.
And nobody said anything?
No, nobody said anything to me, which is so odd, you know? I remember babysitting for this family across the street, and she thought that I had buzz cut, like the sides around my ears. And she's like, that's an interesting look, you know? And I was like, oh, she thought I buzz cut it. I didn't correct her. I mean, what am I going to do? Nobody ever really said anything about it. Ever. I still do it. I'm not proud of it. I try really hard not to. It's definitely a tick that I have that I struggle with.
Is there any other self-harm?
Yeah, I would pull my toenails out.
Oh, gosh. That must be so painful.
You know, it's funny because everybody, when I tell people that, they're like, isn't that painful? And I'm like, yeah, that's the point.
Right.
That's the whole point, is that it's pain. And I guess if you're not somebody who self-harms, you don't understand that that is the entire 100% point. You're not doing it to not feel pain. You're doing it to feel pain. And so, yeah, I mean, it would bleed for days and days. And I would go through, you know, like constant bandages. And it was so painful to walk. And then I remember skiing one time, pulled my foot out of my ski boot, and it was just soaking in blood. I'm pretty sure nobody knew about that. I think I hid that one pretty well.
You lived with your mom for 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
What was it that took you back to your dad's house? Did you?
Well, I was grounded for 30 days. And so I very promptly left and moved back with my dad after the 30 days.
I see. So you were able to strike a deal with dad that living with mom constituted the conditions of your punishment.
Yes. So I moved back in.
Okay. In hindsight, might it have been easier to just be grounded?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally. Totally. I should have just stayed put and shut up, but I didn't. I was 16 and sassy. So I don't know why I did that, but I did. And I was so thankful when it was over and I went back home, unpacked my stuff in my room. And it was just bizarre because like the next morning I get up, go to school, you know, there's like cereal and the milk isn't expired and my clothes were folded, you know, down in the basement. And
you must have been so happy.
Yeah. And I think it was in the first week that I got back. We had steamed artichoke hearts dipped in, this is such a weird memory, but dipped in melted butter that my stepmother put together. She was a really good cook. And I just remember going, wow, this is like night and day. Like, this is the best thing I've ever had.
Okay. So along the way, your dad got remarried.
Yes, he did.
Okay. Tell me about your stepmom.
Well,
I mean, besides, you know, being a talented steamed artichoke preparer.
Yeah. So my stepmother is also from the South and grew up with my dad. They dated in high school and then went off their different ways, whatever. And strangely, she ended up moving into the same state that we were in, but they didn't know it until my dad and her ended up being on the same nonprofit board and they reengaged. They happened to be both going through a divorce at the time. And so, yeah, she started being in our lives and, you know, she was so completely different than my mom. And she had a son, one son.
Did he move in with you?
I think he spent a summer or two with us, never really lived with us because he was 4 years older than me.
You get along with him?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't talked to him in a while, but yeah.
Okay.
Never had any issues with him. He was great. He was great when I was growing up. He was definitely a fresh perspective and he was the polar opposite of my other brother. So I was always kind of interested in him. You know, he's very creative and he was just different. He was different. So they ended up getting married and they moved. She moved into the original house that we lived in with my mom. And then they moved out to the other side of town.
Okay. And do we credit the folded clothes in the basement to her?
We do.
We do.
Yeah.
All right. So she was
for sure.
She was real good. Your family unit was restored.
It was. She made food every day and she was really good to me. She was really good to me. She was definitely the mom that I was looking for.
And did you compare your relationship with your stepmom and your real mom after her change?
Everything was better. She definitely was a mom. Like, she would take me shopping. She's the one that I went to for sure to pick out my wedding dress. And she was kind.
Did you ever have any sense of your mom's reaction to your father's remarriage?
My mom and my dad were never, ever in the same room for, I've got to say, that probably the rest of my life, except for significant events. So one of them was my 8th grade graduation. And I remember my stepmother telling me that she said something to my mom like, you know, your kids are great. I really, you know, have come to, you know, really love them. And she's like, well, I think I deserve credit for that. And my stepmother was like, well, yeah, that's why I'm saying it to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the point is she was constantly on the defensive because she knew that I very much cared about her. She knew that my life with my dad was where I should be. And I'm sure she was jealous. I'm sure she didn't occur to her that somebody would come in that wanted to be part of my life. The three adults, they really never were actually in the same room except for really big events.
Like 8th grade graduation. I didn't know 8th grade graduation like 8th grade. Was the big
event. Well, when you're 8th grade, it's a huge event.
Right.
Yeah, it's the absolute biggest event.
I'm feeling uplifted, Alice, because everything's going, you know, so great. But
yeah.
But then Thanksgiving rolls around, right?
Yeah.
And things change a little bit, right?
They do. That sort of like sparks the beginning of what I would say was the end. So this year we had to go to my mom's for Thanksgiving and she lived upstairs from a clothing store that she ran. So it was on a main drag in our town. So we kind of walk up the stairs, my brother and I, and she's in the kitchen trying real hard to cook something and she's already super drunk. And there's this guy sitting on the couch watching TV.
Just some random dude. You've never met him.
Some random dude. Never met him. Didn't know he was coming.
Okay.
Nothing.
Who'd she say he was?
She's like, this is my friend, Ron.
Okay, Ron.
he's going to join us for dinner. He couldn't be with his family or something like that.
Okay, it's Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Thanksgiving. All right, whatever. It's not like we were looking forward to spending Thanksgiving with her. At least I wasn't. So I was, you know, bring another person in here to kind of mix things up. Sure. Why not? Because then I'm not forced to have like this conversation with her. So I was like, come.
Okay,
please,
good.
Please. Sit down.
Any diversion is welcome.
Right.
Did you get a sense that they were dating?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And from him more than her. Hmm. You know, he was very sort of like, oh, Pat, you know, he touched her a couple times, you know, on the arm and just things like that you pick up on when you're...
You could tell there was some affection there.
Yeah. And so we sat down for dinner. He was a weird guy, but, you know, no huge red flags, but he was a weird guy. And then my brother actually got into a little bit of an argument with him at the table. And it was over quickly, but it was like a little bit of a snapping back and forth.
Do you remember what it was about?
Mm-mm. No. I don't, but it was just sort of like, you know, you're just sort of like, huh, what? It's almost like it was happening and I didn't even realize it was happening until it was, and then it was over. You know what I mean? And I was like, okay, wait, what just happened? And then we got up and left. We, you know, it was like, okay, we're out of here.
As a result of the argument?
Yeah, it was more like, okay, it's time for this to be, you know. Okay. So yeah, we just got up and left and we went back home.
Okay, so you're back home and you're like, phew, glad to be out of there. Check, we got Thanksgiving done.
Yeah. I mean, I really didn't think anything of it.
Didn't think anything of it.
Mm-mm. Nope. And so we went through the holidays and I don't think we saw my mom at Christmas. I don't remember. But if we did, it was brief. And so after the holidays, I wake up one day and I come downstairs to the kitchen like I did every morning. And my dad was sitting in there and he was sort of waiting for me. I'm like, hey, what's up? And he's like, are you mailing out psychological reports from our divorce? And at the time, I had absolutely no clue what he was talking about. So I'm like, I don't know what? And he's like, so somebody is mailing or has mailed out these psychological reports from that therapist that we all met with. And I'm like, okay, why would anybody do that? And he's like, I don't know. But your mother thinks that it's you that's mailed this out. And I'm like, okay, well, where would I get that? What is it? I mean, I didn't even remember at the time that we even had a report. I heard my dad talking a little bit about it, you know, here and there, but I never read the report. I still have never read it.
And who were the reports mailed to?
They were mailed to her family and mailed in an envelope that often was handwritten to these people. So the first round of these went out and of course my mom got a call from somebody and my dad is sitting here and he's like, I don't really understand what's going on here, but your mom is convinced that you have printed off these reports and mailed them to her family members. I had absolutely no fucking idea what he was talking about. Like I just literally was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't even pay attention because I was like, well, that's ridiculous. Of course I didn't do that.
But so you steadfastly maintained your innocence.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, I just really didn't think it was that big of a deal. And I kind of probably chuckled during the period of time. I learned that all of that is public record because it was court appointed. Those psychological reports were available for anybody to go down to city court or whatever and make copies of.
That doesn't sound right.
It doesn't. I hope that's changed. I don't know. I'll be honest. When I looked up this therapist guy that did the report, I could see online other people's reports.
Anybody could have done this.
Yeah. But you would have to know, right? Like you would have to know.
Yeah. You'd have to know of the existence of the reports.
Yeah.
And you'd have to be motivated enough to go get them.
So motivated.
And then just mail them out.
Right.
So that sounds like a lot of effort, especially for a kid.
Huge.
Why would you do this? So did your dad believe you? Did he say, oh, okay. I just had to ask.
Well, I think he was so confused, just like I was. I think he was just like, what a weird thing. And like, why, you know, we've been divorced for a while. Who cares? You know, I do think that he believed me at that moment. And I think he in his head was like, well, why would she do that? I mean, she can't even like put her cereal bowl in the dishwasher. Why would she be able to do something this complicated? No. So I think at that time, and I mean, I was 16, I had no idea how to get court documents or anything like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it truly was. But she worked very hard to convince him that it was me.
Yeah.
She spent a lot of time and energy convincing a lot of people that it was me. So this report came out and it went to her family members. She was upset about it. There was back and forth where I stopped talking to her. And there was back and forth with her and my dad on, okay, well, she must have my address book and she must have this and I want these things back. And, you know, so he would come to me and say, okay, if you have her address book, you need to give it to me. And I'm like, address book? Why would I have her address book? Why do I care who's in her address book? He's just like, well, she thinks that you have it. And you know, it gets to the point where you're just like, this woman's nuts. And if you're just going to sit here and jump, Dad, every single time she has some crazy idea, you know, I started getting really upset with him. Like, this is stupid. What? Why would I do this? He did not have my back. And I don't know why, but he just kept doing whatever she said. And I kept saying, this is stupid. This is, you know, and I don't have time for this. And come on. And neither do you. And then he'd be like, okay, yeah, you're right. You know, then there was another wave of them that went out. And this time it went out to a bunch of her friends locally. And it was a pretty large group of people. And once again, you know, come downstairs and he's there and he's like, okay, this happened. And I'm like, you're kidding me. I mean, it's just mind blowing. And so he's like, I need to know what the hell is going on with you. I need to know why you're doing this, you know. And I was just like, Dad, I am not doing that. I wouldn't even know where to begin. I am not doing it. You must believe me. I wouldn't do that. You know, I wouldn't even know how to do that. I'm a kid.
How was his tone?
Concerned. He was concerned because he didn't really understand it either. Some local friends here came up to me and tried to kind of probe some information out of me, which I thought was really unfortunate and sad. They were like some of my best friend's parents. It just got to the point where it was like, we're just going to find a way to figure out how Alice did this. Like, we know she did it. If we can't find evidence here, we're going to find it somewhere else. That's what it felt like. I didn't know what else to do. Like, you can only say, I didn't do this so many times. And she just absolutely would not believe me. She was like, I think Alice should go see a therapist. And I was like, okay, that's fine with me. So we picked out this therapist, this woman that was near where my dad and stepmom lived. And I went to see her. And I could tell the minute I walked in the door that she was on the defensive, meaning she had already heard some story and she was already ready there to pounce and say, you need to shape up. You need to stop doing these things. You're hurting your mother. It wasn't like, tell me what's going on. It was, tell me why you're doing these things. And I was just like, oh, great.
She'd already made up her mind before you walked in the door.
She already made up her mind. Yeah. Early on in my discussions with her, she wanted my mom to come to one of the sessions. So my mother comes.
How'd that go?
It didn't go well. It didn't go well. So she sat down, my mother, and this woman is like, tell me, you know, what you think the problem is with Alice. And she said, my daughter can't tell the difference between fantasy and reality.
Coming from the woman who has that same problem.
Exactly. And I mean, I don't know, hypocrisy at its finest. I don't know how to explain, Ben, to you how incredible that was to hear.
Incredible.
And be young and have these two grown-ups sit in a room and basically accuse me of trying to be, that I'm nuts, that I am the crazy one. And I am sitting next to somebody, my mother, who controls me. I'm a kid still. She can control what happens to me. I've never been more scared in my life. At that moment, I was just like, holy shit. Like, what is going on here? This woman is telling these people that I am the crazy one when she's the one that talks to herself during the day as though she is at a party. I don't get this.
I mean, you must have felt the ground shifting beneath your feet. It would be extremely scary. You must have felt very unsure.
I was so scared. I don't know how to really put it into words, but I was just like, okay, this is a turning point. This is serious. And now I have to start fighting for myself. I do remember like leaving and going, I've got to pull on my big girl pants here because nobody's going to help me. Nobody is helping me. This is on me. At the time, I was like, okay, I'm going to fucking do this. And yeah, fuck her. And I know the truth. In my head, I was like psyching myself, like, I can handle this.
You don't even have Dad in your corner.
No, I didn't. you know, in hindsight, I'm like, how could any 16-year-old go through that or even have that one conversation with your with the therapist and your mother and walk away from that thinking everything's going to be okay?
Right.
I knew the minute it came out of her mouth that this was going to be a really long fucking road and it was going to get ugly. I just knew it. And it did. It did.
What happened next?
This is a big one.
I'm ready, I think.
So I get up one day and I remember it was on a weekend and I was out that night with some of my friends on the other side of town. My dad is sitting in the kitchen again and he looks distraught, like distraught. And he's like, where were you last night?
Okay.
And I'm like, I was out, you know, with my friends. And he's like, okay, where did you go? And I'm like, I don't know. I went to here and there and then we hung out at so-and-so's place. Why? And he's like, well, somebody tried to blow up the car in your mother's driveway.
What?
And my mom lived in this, she lived in a kind of a busy little area and the houses were pretty close together. So the driveways were, you know, tight, thin. And she didn't have a garage.
Okay.
I mean, I don't, maybe other people can process this a little bit better than I can, but hearing those words are things that I don't know, there's got to be a very few percentage of people in the world that have heard somebody try to like blow up your mom's car, like basically kill your mother. So what they did is they poured gasoline on a towel and stuck it in the gas tank and lit it. Thankfully, it blew out.
So how was it discovered?
It actually wasn't her car. It was her boyfriend's car. And he had this big blue van. When he left in the morning, he went to his car and he saw it. So, of course, my mom called my dad and was like, Alice did this. And my dad was like, oh my God. And so he's telling me this at the kitchen table and I'm not processing it. I mean, obviously I'm not processing that because not only am I like being accused of actually trying to kill my mother, which is hard for me to even like say without, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that somebody just tried to kill my mother. You know what I mean? Like what the hell is going on? That was definitely a huge turning point for us in this whole scenario, this story. This is high stakes here. Now we're not just talking about mailing stuff around the country. We're talking about it, potentially her life is in danger. I don't know.
Right. So you've got two issues you got to deal with. Number one, you're being accused of attempted murder.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, there's the real perp out there somewhere who's trying to kill your mom.
Yeah. And the latter part of that, I don't even think I really thought about that for a while. I was more just like, how could you possibly think that I could do that? I could not get my brain around it.
And your father was dug in on this? He's like, Alice.
I think he was so freaked out that he didn't know what to do. I think he was really, really scared. I think in his brain, he was like, do I even know my daughter? Like, do I even know who this person is living in my house with me? Because my mother is convinced, super convinced, that I am the one doing all of this stuff. And then we have this therapist that isn't telling my dad what he wants to hear, which is that it's not me. And now this happens. Where do you even start with, like, who could possibly want to do that? Where do you even start? This is just a normal little town with normal people. Like, this just does not happen. So obviously she called the police and obviously she told the police that she thought it was me. And so the next day, two plainclothes detectives came to our house, my dad's house. And that day was for sure the scariest day of my life.
Alice is about to face the biggest challenge of her life, a challenge that will test the very core of her character. And this challenge will be a shadow in her life that she will not fully escape, ever. Come back for the gripping conclusion of Alice's secret in just 2 short weeks on the next edition of The Secret Room. Meantime, there are pictures of Alice from that Thanksgiving dinner and of her childhood home right now on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search at Secret Room Pod.
Alice originally shared her story on the amazing podcast, This Is Actually Happening, created and hosted by Whit Mistletoe. It's a podcast featuring the uncanny, extraordinary true stories of events that have dramatically altered the lives of ordinary people. If you love The Secret Room, you simply must check out This Is Actually Happening. And in 1 week, there's a new edition of our members-only podcast.
Next up, Kayla's back from episode 175, Daddy's Daughter. She told us how the image of her perfect family was shattered by the results of a DNA kit and how she's been planning to meet up with her bio dad. Well, they finally met up and Kayla's back to tell me how it went in just 1 week. Also, I have an original interview with a woman who's discovered her mom had been stealing from her for years. That one's up now.
Susie Lark hosts The Secret Room Unlocked, where she does follow-ups and original interviews. It's a great way to support your favorite indie podcast that could. Find it on patreon.com/secretroom and on Apple Podcasts with a free trial. Send us your secret and find our sponsor offers at our website, secretroompod.com. Thanks for downloading. This is The Secret Room, a podcast about the stories no one ever tells. I'm Ben Hamm.